whether it's a small company, big company, your own, like whether it's vendors, etc. It is a challenge, right? Don't be a victim. Just stand out, be yourself, because at the end of the day, it's yourself that's going to succeed, and you have to count on yourself, and be bold, speak up, because I think many of our cultures, like we're humble, we're quiet, soft spoken, don't want to rock the boat, but there are times you have to be disruptional, right? Put yourself out there. Be comfortable by being uncomfortable. So you have to get used to it.
Welcome to Growth Untold, the podcast where we dive into thoughtful conversations and insightful discussions with world-class people, all with the aim of inspiring, educating, and empowering our listeners.
We are thrilled to have you here with us on this exciting journey to explore the diverse stories and the ideas that have the power to shape the world for the better.
Welcome to Growth Untold, the podcast.
Welcome to another episode of Growth Untold. Today, we are thrilled to have a true retail titan with us. We're talking with someone who knows the ins and outs of retail and brick and mortar of North America's leading brands like none other. Currently serves as the co-founder of Unity Brands, CEO of Kitten Ace and Casca Footwear, and the mastermind behind Motive Brands Collective. With over three decades of retail and marketing under his belt, he's perhaps known better for his transformative leadership and keen eye for scaling businesses. From his remarkable stint at Corite International to his numerous accolades, including being ranked among the top CEOs in the Global CEO Awards, his journey is nothing short of inspiring. Get ready to dive deep into the world of retail and entrepreneurship with one of Canada's most celebrated business leaders. Welcome, David Louis. David, welcome to the show.
Welcome, David.
Thank you. Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Mina. My goodness, that introduction, I will probably have to copy it and put that as my bio. But that, it's thank you. Thank you for that, though. Thank you.
Hey, no problem.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, no problem at all. We had to do it justice, just given all of the incredible accolades that you've accomplished in your life, David. But we're really honored and we're happy to have you on the show today. And so there's many ways that we'd like to lead this conversation and in many directions we'd like to go. But, you know, one thing what we want to start off and we typically do with our guests is just growing up and, you know, your childhood and, you know, just how you grew up with your family. So would love to understand more about just at a young age. It seemed like you had such a passion for retail, watching your parents do this at a very young age. So just walk us through your childhood.
Born and raised here in North Vancouver, third floor, Lionsgate Hospital. And grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. My dad immigrated here 1958. He came basically with nothing. He had a leap of faith. He grew up during the war, during very difficult times, and sought a better life for himself. And so he moved here in 1958. And if I reveal my year, you can figure out my age. So I probably won't do that. But I was born and raised here, and he happened to be a self-starter. Like one of his first jobs was actually working for Jimmy Pattison, working on his landscaping in West Van, and actually bought one of his first car off of him. So, and then he has the entrepreneurial bug, because as a new immigrant at that time, very difficult to find jobs, like sustainable long-term jobs. And he also wanted to create something for himself. So he started to go into business, and just over the years, he had grocery stores, restaurants, throughout Vancouver. So growing up in that environment, we moved a lot. We moved from North Van, if you're familiar with Greater Vancouver, North Van, North Burnaby, South Burnaby, Tawatson, Cloverdale, Surrey, Richmond,
wow.
Vancouver. Entrepreneurial, seeking opportunities. And quite frankly, I'm a the youngest of four siblings. I'm the baby in the family. And the fact that, you know, just growing up in that environment, moving around quite a bit and watching him just trying to make ends meet for all of us. And, you know, I recently found out, I recently found out, it's bizarre, right? As I talked to my mom, my dad passed, unfortunately, 2008, but talking to my mom, I just said, I'd like to learn more about how you and dad met. In fact, they met here. I always thought they met in Hong Kong or China. So shame on me, I didn't know that, but that was my perception. And the fact that they met here is quite phenomenal.
I read, David, that you, at a very young age, you had opened up 12 retail stores. I don't know what kind of stores, but apparently you had 6 in Toronto and 6 in Vancouver. What were the stores that you had opened up?
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit of, maybe I'll take a step back and then I'll get to that. I think, so at the age of 18, I went through high school here in North Vancouver, and I didn't like school much. School wasn't also nice to me, but I didn't have the patience, and I wanted to go into business. So I just decided right out of high school, I wanted to go into business. And, you know, my dad always wanted me to say, do I want to do the family business? I didn't like it. I mean, it's grocery, but I liked it. I'm sorry, I should retract that. I liked it, but I had a passion for fashion, because at that time, if you think about back in the late 80s, whether it's Club Monaco, Le Chateau, there wasn't too many, right? Yeah. So I thought, you know, I want to get into fashion. I like the trend and sort of the glamour behind things. But I'm like, where do I buy the product? Like, where do I get it? So I decided that I was more of an introvert in school, quite frankly. So the fact that I actually pushed myself and said, I'm going to reach out to companies in Asia. Because at that time, there was an influx of immigrants coming in from Hong Kong. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to try to bring something from their home to their new home, something that they're familiar with, that, you know, I can get instant traction and quite, you know, frankly, hopefully I can scale the business. So I did cold calls. I think, Alex, you know, one point you mentioned, I did cold calls. Like, actually I called it cold fax. Cause do you remember the fax machine?
Yeah.
At that time there was the popular fax machine was in front of me. I'm like, how do I reach these guys? So there was no Google. I can't find phone numbers, fax numbers, but I was familiar with brands. And how do I get familiar with brands in Hong Kong? I'm not sure, Alex, if you watch China, like Hong Kong's like series, TV series, the credits as they scrolled, they said apparel provided by the X.
Wow.
So I saw that and like, okay, well, if that's a popular actor or actress wearing that brand, obviously there's some recognition. So I started placing calls, like long distance call to Hong Kong, trying to get a fax machine. There was no emails there, right? So got the number, sent a number of faxes. And I'll tell you the story. So I had secured meetings with three companies, three brands. And I said to my mom, I said, I want to go to Hong Kong. Why? Because I want to meet these companies. She says, well, you've never been to Hong Kong. So I'm going to go. So please buy me a ticket. So flew to Hong Kong, met up with these folks. Two of them struck out. The last one I went to, it was walking into the meeting of a publicly traded, fast emerging brand. Two of the executives greeted me, sat in the boardroom, waited for the chairman. And the chairman eventually showed up, sat down, and in 3 to 5 minutes, he stood up and walked out. And I quickly got basically ushered out of the meeting. I was like, wow, that went odd. Left with nothing. So strike three, I'm out. So I flew back and I'm like, what do I do now? Because I signed my very first store in Richmond, BC on January 9th, and I was supposed to open the store on June 9th. So I had 6 months to find something, but I signed the lease, not knowing what
you
I was
signed
going
to
sell.
The lease before you even had products or knew anything.
Oh yeah, I convinced the landlord to lease me the space, but I had nothing. So I was like, oh darn, what am I going to do? So I did some postmortem debrief with my friends, and they said, look, how did you approach the meeting? Did you have a presentation? And we went through it, like they interrogated me, and I just said, look, this is what I wore, da da da. You wore what? You wore a t-shirt and a pair of jeans and a varsity jacket? I go, yeah. He goes, oh my God, like you didn't even wear a suit and tie? No. You didn't have a presentation? No. So that's a young, naive 18-year-old, right? So I again, formalized a letterhead, drafted the letter, proofread it probably, I don't know, 100 times to make sure it's right. Faxed it again, got a response. They said, okay, I'd like to meet with you. Again, I flew back to Hong Kong, sat with him. The chairman came in. He sat down. I was in a suit and tie at that time. And he says, we started talking. It was a two-hour meeting. Two-hour meeting. Wow. I had a proper presentation, proper, I guess, attire. After that meeting, he says, okay, David, I'll grant you a 12-month exclusive license. If you prove you are successful, I grant you like a permanent license. And I'm like, wow, win, right? After the meeting, I said, do you remember me? He goes, no. I go, I was here about 6 months ago and you turned me down.
Oh my God.
I had no idea. So that's how I got the brand. Then I opened the store, made it on time, and just grew it. I opened on, if you're familiar with Vancouver, Robson Street, Pacific Center, Richmond Center, Metrotown.
And what brand was this, David?
It was a brand called Theme, T-H-E-M-E. It was based in Hong Kong, emerging brand, men's, women's, sort of young professional wear. And it was growing, 250 stores around Asia. So I had the exclusive license for North America. So wow. I started opening stores and, you know, I had wholesale opportunities, but I'm going to control the distribution. So I had 6 stores here in Vancouver, and then I opened 6 stores in Toronto. So I had a total of 12 stores. And I got recognized for it and wanted to grow the business. And you're probably wondering what happened. I think, you know what, I grew it. I almost sold my share. I could have, when I was raising funds, I could have sold my share for $30 million. This is back in 1995.
Wow.
Right? If you think about that, 1995. But I didn't do it because the chairman, the licensor, says, I'm going to come in. We're going to blow this thing up. So don't sell it. I'm coming in. I think, you know what, partnerships either work or they don't work. I think that was a bit of a learning lesson. So young and naive, young at that time, that was like 23 years old.
So you'd been doing it for about 5 years.
Yeah, doing it about 5 years. And then with the partnership, we continue to grow it and try to build it. I think at that time, the partnership didn't work, unfortunately.
But like, this is incredible, by the way. Like, we need to take a step back for a second, because David, it seems like, first of all, you, from just hearing you riff off, it seems like you had an innate curiosity at an early age. Like the fact that you read the credits and you acted on that innate curiosity, then you were resourceful, and then you had the wherewithal and the courage to send a cold fax, not a cold call, cold fax, yeah. And to make that a reality. And then you learn from your mistakes quickly, from dressing too casual and too casual in your approach. Like, you adapted accordingly super quickly. Like, where did this, I guess, this ability or this natural skill to act on? Like, there's so many people I feel like thinking or sitting on their hands and they're not acting. But like, you had this, it seems like, when you were 18 or when you were a kid, where this hunger to like act right away or make actions right away come from?
I'm not sure, but I do credit my dad, because seeing him talk to vendors, approaching vendors, like I used to wake up with him early in the morning and go to the distribution center and pick up product, or go to the flower auction and auction, you know, prices, buy roses and pot plants, etc. So I think I get a bit of that drive from him. But I think, you know what, going through school was not an easy, because our school wasn't, there was not a lot of, say, there was a few Asians growing up in school, and it was very tough. I was bullied, and the school didn't believe in me. I can tell you one story that quickly, like grade 12, you go through counselor, and they try to determine what your career paths are, right? So I sat down with the counselor, and the counselor says, David, you'll never be successful.
My God.
Yes.
That's terrible.
Oh yeah. I'm not going to name the school, but that's what happened. I think when I reflect back to your question, like when I reflect back throughout my career, I was like, what fueled me? I think the challenge of being doubted, you know, challenged with not believing in me or seeing the possibilities. I think that drove me. That really drove me. And so, yeah, I had nothing to lose. Cold facts, jump over there, put myself out there, and having to learn. Fail fast, learn fast, come out of it. Try to come out of it.
And get back up, yeah. So you basically had $30 million at the tip of your hands, and you decided to, you know, continue going with this company, with the chairman. So what happens? Does it just completely fall on its face in North America and that's it? Well, what do you do next?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, they also ran into problems in Asia. So with him owning more than 50, he eventually put more than 50%. So that pulled the company down, and I decided I had an opportunity where I had great real estate with landlords. And I just said, look, I'm going to take this opportunity to scale back. If you don't want it, I'm going to scale back. Because he ran into trouble where I couldn't get product shipped to us. So I had to pivot. And it was just too, it was difficult. It was just from financial aspects, it's just a big shift. 12 stores, big inventory. I was in clearance mode because it's summer. I didn't have fall product coming in. So I had to pivot. So what I did is I decided I'm going to sell whatever I can and exit the business.
After this moment, right? I'm just curious, like, what were your next steps here? Like, how did you refocus? How did you jump back again on? And what was your next venture immediately after this?
So that time I was like 28.
Still a young gun.
Still young, but felt really old after all those years, right? I was 28 and I was married. I also got married young, so at 24. And so luckily my spouse was very supportive. And she goes, oh, you know what? We can take our time, we can see what you want to do. And so I was evaluating, do I go back into entrepreneur life or do I find a job? Right. Mm-hmm. So I had to pivot, and some of the contacts. So what I had to do was I just had to decide, like, what are my opportunities? Do I start something up again or do I join something? But if I join something, what's that going to look like? So I did some consulting because I thought, oh, you know, I know some people, I'm going to do some consulting. And then one day I got a phone call from the owner of Esprit out of Montreal. And he called me, and I said, oh, hey, Lawrence. And he says, hey, you know what? I'm looking for someone to run Canada. You know, at that time, Esprit was owned by Hong Kong. Can you, you know, looking for someone to run Canada, come over. So we had a good chat, flew to Montreal, met with them. And yeah, I said, okay, I'll join you. So that was my first foray into corporate life. But so that's my next move. So I ran Esprit Canada under the corporate umbrella, reporting out of Hong Kong, and rebuilt the stores, grew the business. And that was my next move, Alex.
Yeah.
And how was that? Because that's, you went from being an entrepreneur and basically running, you know, 12 stores yourself, not yourself. I know you had a team, but, you know, you were managing and running, owning and operating 12 stores. and then going and working for a large corporation. Did you notice a difference? Did you like it more or less? Or to you, was it kind of more or less the same?
You know what? Because the attraction of like, come into this organization, you have to transform it, restructure it. And it's almost like it was running my own business, but at a larger scale, because at that time there was about 35 stores across Canada with a significant wholesale business. It was like, run the business as if it was your own. Yes. So I had access to capital because of the head office. At the same time, of course, I had a CEO that I would report into, but basically run the show like it was your own. And they know my background because there's a common connection with what I was doing. So I loved it, Mina. The fact that I had access to capital, it literally closed at that time 20 stores, reopened 35 stores in the span of 18 months, and restructured the wholesale division. So that was fun. So I wore my sort of entrepreneurial hat at that time.
And how old were you when you left Esprit?
Oh boy, that was like 32. And then that's when Peter Nygaard, if you heard of him, well, minus what he's doing now, but you know, he was an up and coming brand, womenswear brand in Canada, vertically integrated. So yeah, he courted me, I joined him. So I left Esprit and went that route. So I have built a career in the corporate world, but I resonated with roles that allowed me to be entrepreneurial. And
that's a very good way to put it.
Right. And that resonated with me, right? Still was able to take risks, run quickly, be innovative, and move. But throughout my career, like all my different roles, I've always had that entrepreneurial bug, and I've invested in businesses. I've consulted with other businesses. Right before the pandemic in 2020, I decided that I'm going to look at joining a partner and buying a fossil jewelry company in Calgary. Right. But prior to that, I was with Canadian Tire. So you think about startups, mid-sized businesses to now a multi-billion-dollar company. I had the benefit of getting exposure to those various different levels of organizations.
And can we talk about that for a second? Because it's such an interesting route that you went from very, very scrappy, very entrepreneurial. And then you transitioned to Northwest, Mark's, FGL, Canadian Tire Corporation in a marketing capacity, building beautiful brand campaigns. One that I'm a big fan of is Find What Moves You. I think that's an incredible campaign, but more about that later. What facets of being an entrepreneur did you carry into a marketing role? Like, what was beneficial in a marketing capacity?
I think two aspects. One is I've always loved brands. And that's why my foray with Hong Kong-based brands resonate with me. So I always love the brand aspect, marketing aspect. But the entrepreneur side in those roles is really, I'm very mindful of the dollar. It's hard to earn a dollar. So when I'm given budgets, whether it's $100,000 to, you know, I was managing a couple $100 million of budgets, but very mindful of how to spend that dollar. Right. At one point, the person I was reporting to, you know, you submit expense reports, right? And rarely get checked. But then one comment was, David, like you don't spend a lot of money. I go, what do you mean? You don't, whenever you come in to Toronto, you have Subway for dinner. I said, I don't need to go to the keg or whatever. Right? So I take a very simple, humble approach to things because I know making a dollar is very difficult. And I attribute that to my parents.
I think you take it to the next level too. And it kind of shows your integrity and it shows how honest of a person you are just from talking to you this very first time, because you were doing that with other people's money. A lot of people are frugal with their own money, but then they get a corporate budget from a Canadian Tire or a big corporation, and they're like, oh, well, now I'm going to spend it because it's not my money. I don't have to worry about it. The fact that you're still going to Subway on a corporate budget, I mean, that shows that, you know, you stick to your roots and you treat other people's money as your own. That's huge. That's huge.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't do it on purpose. It's just, I think it's part of me. But you know what? I think, and quite frankly, even like today, with as owner of Kidneys, and we have great partners, you know, I think we all think alike, and there's no need to, you know, be scrappy and be mindful. That's really it, right?
Yeah.
And be respectful.
Yeah. Yeah, which definitely comes across. So tell us about Unity, because under Unity, it seems over just the past couple of years, you and your partners have been able to really ramp it up. I mean, you've been acquiring really great companies. You've just acquired Mastermind Toys, which I thought was a huge move. So tell us about, you know, your foray from, you know, investing into this fossil jewelry company into starting Unity and starting to acquire these brands, and how you know, evaluate what to acquire and what not to acquire.
So Mina, it's interesting, right? The perception is we had this running for a couple of years. It's actually 9 months.
Even shorter. Yeah. I knew it was a short amount of time.
Yeah. So 9 months. So, But the development of that took a little bit longer, maybe a year ago. So look, when I was looking for, okay, as an entrepreneur, you get antsy, right? I created like ants in my pants. I'm jumping around, and I've been looking at, okay, well, I've got this happening. What else can I do? And I just had a conversation with the former CEO here, Kit Nace. I went to him for some advice because I was looking at this other target to whether I invest in. And it just morphed in a conversation to say, oh, you know, why don't you look at acquiring the company? So that conversation quickly switched. But Motive Brands that you referenced earlier, Alex, was a company that I formed with the vision to collective, right? It's a collect that I named it Collective because I wanted to collect a family of brands. And I saw that this was an area where with Kit and Ace, that could be a good springboard. So I went for after Kit and Ace, and I went to Joe Mimran, who you're probably familiar with, founder of Club Monaco, Joe Fresh, and amongst other brands. Him and Frank also own Tilly. Having a conversation with him, it just quickly became a very good partnership. We aligned with our vision. They also wanted to create a company that owned great Canadian brands. So from alignment, definitely aligned. And the three of us joined together and we bought Kit and Ace, and we closed it last June. We formed Unity to acquire Kit and Ace, and then Unity became, okay, our collective, the three of us, what's our vision? Then we looked at opportunities. So we bought Kidneys. We bought Casket Footwear. It's a small brand, but we want to, it's an opportunity. It's known in the US. Right before the holidays, Mastermind Toys became an opportunity. So iconic brands within Kidneys, iconic brands is Mastermind Toys. And, you know, we're talking to a few others. So ultimately what we want to do is develop this family of brands that we can leverage with our centers of excellence, our skills and capability, because Joe's team in product design, sourcing, I'm very focused on the operations, the marketing, e-commerce. Like, this is a good combination that we believe that whatever brands we acquire or fold into the company, we have the capability to scale. So 9 months into this journey.
Yeah, that's amazing. But of course, you and your partners, like you mentioned, have so much experience in building brands and taking brands to the next level. When you're taking a look at these brands that you want to acquire, do they have to be profitable businesses already, or do you just have to see the potential in them being profitable or getting back to profitability for you to decide to pull the trigger? Like, what's the, you know, what are you evaluating when it comes to the bottom line?
Well, first criteria, we look for good brands, like brands that have top of mind awareness, have a lot of, you know, strong legacy that we could leverage and then turn. They don't have to be profitable. Like, we're not a private equity firm. We're not a venture capital. You know, it is our own funds, but we also want to operate it and build it for the longer term. So that's quite a difference between us. But we do look at if they're not profitable, is there ways within our system, our Unity system, that could quickly turn them into profitability, whether it's product sourcing, everything that I've mentioned, and look for opportunities there. That's an attraction for us. That's a checklist. But they have to be brands that people know, love, even if they love but don't buy it today, they still love it. If we can tweak it, that gives us, you know, butterflies. That's the opportunity, right?
Interesting. Yeah. Can we switch gears for a second? And so we were reading an article about, you know, what you do to promote product, especially with the KOL. I believe it's called the Key Opinion Leader, right? And you've built I think this is interesting in a sense, and please correct me if I'm going off course here, but I think of it as we all know about shopping channels on TV, right? And, you know, historically, when we think of shopping channels, we're like, oh, okay, you just flip through the channel and you're like, whatever, they're showing their product, they're showing their clothing. But I think that you found a Chinese app, shopping app, where you live stream people trying out clothing and demonstrating the clothing and showing the designs of the clothing and the way to wear it from Kitnace. Can you walk us through that? How are you able to be so successful? How did you identify this? How did you identify this? And then how were you able to capitalize on this?
Well, we're still learning that piece, right? But we've done okay. Actually, it stemmed when I was at Corite, because the product was known and demand for it in China. And so that was an ease of entry point, like demand. And then we thought, how do we deliver that into China? How do we deliver that to consumers there? And so we just look at, where are people shopping? I mean, the behavior in China compared to the West, very different, right? Because I think in China and Asia, a lot of people are on their phones and working and entertainment through apps. Whereas here is more the desktop or mobile, right? But their apps are so prevalent in China. And the fact that a lot of consumers in China love to be entertained through the apps, whether they watch shows or live shows. So I thought, you know what delivers that best? Well, you got the Alibaba products like Tmall, Taobao, you got Douyin, which is sort of the equivalent of TikTok. There's so many platforms. And Taobao happens to be an easier point of entry to China. And sold online. So we thought, okay, let's do live streaming. And it's worked. I mean, the fact that even at Corite, if you know what it is, it's like a fossilized gemstone that was 70 million years ago. Basically, it's a squid-like creature that over the years just fossilized in only one part of the world that's found with this sort of shell. Selling rocks into China. Right, through live streaming, where every piece is unique and one of a kind. So a KOL basically is like an influencer, I guess the term influencer in the West. We find loyal followings. We find someone that can entertain, tell stories, and ultimately sell on the platform. And we found that we've had some success with that. And then at Kitnace, we did the same thing. And we've been selling into China our apparel, at various different price points. And we ship directly to the consumer, and we work through a partner. I mean, it's difficult, right? Language, Mandarin, etc. But we work through a partner, and we're shipping into China our product.
That's really smart.
Do you think that for entrepreneurs now looking to start a business, do you think it's still worth pursuing businesses that are brick and mortar? Or from your experience, you know, times have changed, of course, from the 70s to the 90s to now. Do you think it's still worth pursuing businesses brick and mortar? And do you think you can really still scale those? Or is it not even worth kind of pursuing those kinds of businesses?
No, Mina, actually, bricks and mortar, it's like everything else, like fashion business kind of comes in rotation. Of course, during the pandemic, stores were impacted, online grew rapidly. Now that things have sort of subsided, stores are back. Like, because at the end of the day, you know, store bricks and mortar, it's like a community space. People want to walk around, touch the product, talk to people from a social aspect. We find retail, bricks and mortar, is back. But I believe as an organization, any organization, you have to think about the omni experience. You know, actually, the first point of contact of a store is actually your mobile phone, right? Like, it's not just a phone, it is the store. So if you can translate that experience right into the brick and mortar, because what we find with our guests, they love to come in to touch the fabric. And whether they buy in store, which they do, but if they don't buy in store or they bought in store, they'll buy a second item online. So it becomes very seamless, right? So both channels is very important. And today, like, our stores are performing very strong, which encourages us to start to open more stores and seek out opportunities. But our online engine needs to be top notch.
You know what's really funny, David, is that I went to the Kitney store in Eaton Center, and the very first thing I did was touch the materials of the items. And because I'm like that, right? Like, I feel like knit is in right now. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I feel like knitted t-shirts, knitted polos. So when I went in there, I was like, wow, this is some high quality shit. Like, you, Kitten Ace, is the aesthetics, the way, the layout, everything was top notch. But I was like touching everything. And I spent way too much time touching. Honestly, the manager is probably like, what? This guy's a bit of a weirdo. We need to get him out of here. But no, that's incredibly quality product. And I could see that you put a lot of time and effort into designing that.
Well, that's something we as a brand pride ourselves into, right? Like, we do want our guests to come into the store and do exactly, you know, take your time, Alex, like touch everything, like go from the men's side to the women's side and
the floor.
You can buy the floor too if you want, but, but our guest always says, look, you have beautiful pictures, you know, intrigues me with your brand. But every time I come into the store, I touch. And if you even try it on, it makes a big difference. Right. So, yeah. So that experience is so important in the retail game. It's not just retail apparel, everything from food, right? Hospitality. It's all about that experience.
So because experience is such a pivotal, pillar in your businesses, you are saying that brick and mortar is back and we're getting back there. What other pieces of advice would you give to entrepreneurs, maybe your own kids that you've given advice to, that are looking to, I don't even want to say start a business, like just make a life for themselves, right? They want to be successful. They want to work towards something. What piece of advice would you give these up-and-comers who want to start something and work towards something?
Well, maybe I'll explain it this way, how I explain it to my kids. So my son's a successful entrepreneur. He's 23. He's doing way better than I have. And my daughter too, you know, even though she's still going through school as a third year. But my advice to them was, you know what? Yeah, you have to take some risk, but make sure you learn from it. But also don't be closed. Don't be arrogant. because, you know, some of the new generations could get to that point. But it's really, you know, embrace learning, talk to as many people as you can, because and network, because at some point in time in your life, whether you're in business or you're working, you're going to have to leverage that network. And, you know, take some risks, but don't be too naive. And one of the biggest advice I always gave them is pay yourself first. So if you're going to make some money, pay yourself first. And they say, what does that mean? You know what? Sock it away. Put it into an emergency fund or an RSP or a TFSA. Well, right? Just pay yourself first. Go, no, I can reinvest it and make more money. I go, yeah, you got to diversify, right? I, quite frankly, see, $30 million, right? I should have paid my friend. I should have paid myself first. So
yeah,
I'm kind of speaking from where I either regret or at least I learned from it, right? So, and so that's what I say to them.
That's
I'll say to the viewers.
Yeah, thank you. And that's an amazing piece of advice, even for Mina and I here too. Can we zoom in a little bit more on that? And for diverse individuals, we have, you know, three ethnically diverse people on this podcast right now. This podcast is about celebrating, you know, diverse voices, racially diverse voices. Any advice for the people who at times are the only people in the room, sometimes are the only people, you know, giving that presentation amongst people who don't really look like them? Do you have any advice for folks?
Yeah, you know what? Don't be intimidated. Because I've been through that phase too, right? Whether it's a small company, big company, your own, like whether it's vendors, etc., it is a challenge, right? Don't be a victim. Just stand out, be yourself. Because at the end of the day, it's yourself that's going to succeed, and you have to count on yourself. And be bold, speak up, because I think many of our cultures, like, we're humble, we're quiet, soft spoken, don't want to rock the boat. But there are times you have to be disruptional, right? Put yourself out there. Be comfortable by being uncomfortable. So you have to get used to it. So yeah, push yourself.
That's great. I'm going to ask a question now. This might make more sense earlier in the conversation, but I really want to ask it because I didn't get a chance to ask it. So David, what did you end up doing after Theme? I believe you said was the name of the franchise, right?
Yep.
You could have walked away with all this money. And if I was in your position, I'd probably feel really let down. I'd feel deflated. I'd feel like, my gosh, I worked all these years and, you know, I've got nothing out of it. How did you feel at that point in your life? And what did you do to get yourself back up?
Whoa. You know, I never told anybody about this. So, yeah, it was hard. It was hard. Totally disappointed. Like, I was talking to landlords in San Fran, LA, Chicago. There's big dreams. Right. And having to scale down and then walk away with not 30 million. Right. So, yeah, it was a hard time. Like, mental health wasn't really a topic back then. Right. And having to make sure that I look after myself. And quite frankly, I attribute it to my wife too. I can't forget how she supported me and encouraged me. Right. So, yeah, I went through a period of time, probably first 3 months. I didn't sleep for 10 years. So I slept a lot. Right. And I had to find something to re-energize me. And, you know, I gained a lot of weight, put on pounds and whatever. And when I got the opportunity with Esprit, I was like, okay, I have to, here's another second opportunity. Right. Albeit it's not mine, but it's an opportunity. And to scale something that I'm thinking like it's mine, but it's not mine, but it's mine. And that helped me get over it. I was fortunate with people believing me, but I just had to push through.
Damn, I'm not sure if that answered. I can imagine.
It. Yeah.
No, that's great. I can imagine. Cause Alex and I often talk about this concept of, You know, it's oftentimes at your what other people perceive as your highest point that you internally are really at your lowest point. And how do you manage that? Because it is difficult to manage when other people think a certain way about you. Like, oh man, David, he's got, you know, these 12 stores, he's doing so well. But you know the reality of it's crumbling right before your very eyes, and how you navigate that, you know, because it's because you know what the reality is. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. I can imagine it must have been a difficult time. And then getting that second opportunity of you going, all right, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to make the same mistakes this time.
Yeah, you know what? You go through a period of time. I'm thinking back. No one has brought me back. By the way, no one has brought me back until now, really.
I'm doing it. I'm bringing you back, yeah, David.
you're a good interviewer. It's very difficult to not think that you failed, right? Because then you go down a rabbit hole. I'm an optimistic guy generally, and I always like to look at the bright side. So I always internally believe that I will come back. I will come back. And I am destined to do something great. And I constantly reminded myself that. And of course, my siblings, my wife, my mom, my dad, always, yes, you can. Yes, you can. But, you know, they got the traditional family to go get a job. Actually, you know what? Have you thought about going back to school? Because I don't have my undergraduate degree, right? So, but try not to think of it as a failure. Always believe in yourself and dream big. Keep dreaming. And look, my career was not a smooth ride. Esprit, Nygaard. When I talk about Vancouver, we moved a lot within Greater Vancouver. I took it one level more. I moved across Canada. If I gave you a test, the amount of times I moved across Canada, from Montreal, Vancouver, Toronto, Winnipeg. I moved into Winnipeg 5 times in my career, and then to Calgary, and then now I'm back into Vancouver. So, you know, I've never settled. I always believed in myself, and I always wanted to strive for more. So, yeah,
that's amazing,
fantastic.
You're gonna make me emotional.
Yeah, well, that's what the podcast is all about. That's what Growth Untold is all about. It's about reflecting a little bit and sharing some of that knowledge. I mean, you know, you're such a great example of someone who's done so much with so little. You know, like you said, you had your father as a great example, but you basically, you know, decided school's not for me. I'm going to go for this. I'm going to go, you know, start this business. You did. And that's oftentimes when it's actually the hardest. I think, you know, when a lot of people talk to me about my success, that's what I tell them. I tell them oftentimes when you find great success is when it's actually the most difficult, because when you're tenacious and you're ambitious, you start to look at yourself and go, all right, well, what's next? Well, how am I going to up that? How am I going to take this to the next level? And then you start doubting that you ever can. You start doubting that you'll be able to repeat the success. And that's why I asked you about that, because, you know, I've been there thinking all those things, and it's difficult. It's difficult to believe in yourself a second time and a third time and a fourth time and go, you know what? I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do it even better. So.
Yep. Yep. When you get, what did we say earlier in the podcast? If you get knocked down, stand right up, right, and mm-hmm. face your opponent head on. It's not easy. It's definitely not easy. I remember there are days it's like, what am I doing here, or how am I going to overcome this? And but it's also seizing opportunities, right? If an opportunity comes along, it's hard, but don't question it. Don't question yourself. I would say say yes, even though internally you may be saying, holy shit, can I do it? Right?
Yeah.
But say yes. And then, you know what? I think we always figure it out. Like, we always figure a way out of this. right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's, I feel like that's a perfect way to end this episode, David. I think this has been incredibly inspirational. We learned a lot about just your journey through retail, through starting your own businesses, to starting Unity. Thank you so much for taking the time to shed so much wisdom with us and the listeners on Growth Untold. We appreciate it, David.
We can't see what's next for Unity and what you acquire next. I know it's coming. So I'm going to keep an eye out of what's that next acquisition.
The acquisition of Growth Untold. The acquisition of Growth Untold, Mina.
Hey, I want to interview you guys. Let's turn the tables here. Yeah. Thank you.
Time.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for the time. Really, really honored, Alex, for you and Mina to reach out to me. What a pleasure. Thank you.
Pleasure's been all ours. Take care, David.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for tuning in and listening. Please subscribe, share, and join the journey of Growth Untold. Don't miss a single nugget. Hit that follow button now on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and Instagram.